Maine's Secretary of State gears up for Election Day and cleaner license plates. With Election Day 2 weeks from today, absentee voting is already underway in Maine. In fact, it has been since October 2nd. Voters will decide three ballot questions and many local issues. Overseeing it all, the Secretary of State, Shenna Bellows. Bellows has been in office since January. She is a committed advocate to the expansion of voting rights and voter participation. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, the Secretary of State joins us to talk about the upcoming election, challenges to voting around the nation, and what's happening at the Bureau of Motor Vehicles, which she also oversees. New rules regulating vulgar license plates are all the talk. We'll find out how she plans to get them off the road. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today on the program, our guest, Maine Secretary of State Shenna Bellows. When we last spoke with her, she was new to the position as Maine Secretary of State. Now we're going to learn what she's been working on, especially because today is 2 weeks till Election Day. Shenna is Maine's 50th Secretary of State, the first woman. Hard to say that, the 50th Secretary of State and the first woman to hold the position. She previously served two terms in the Maine Senate and directed the Holocaust and Human Rights Center of Maine. Shenna, welcome back to Maine Calling.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
And of course, this is about you, the audience. We invite your questions and comments. What do you want to know about election this year? What do you want to know about the Bureau of Motor Vehicles or the Maine State Archives? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page or to Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Election Day, Shenna, is 2 weeks away, but people have already begun voting because absentee voting began October 2nd. What is new this time around? I understand some laws have been passed and there are some changes from just last November.
That's right. And Maine has a lot to be proud of. We, while other states around the country were rolling back voting rights laws, here in Maine, the legislature and Governor Mills were strengthening our voting laws. So what's new this November? Well, you can use a system that it was established last year on a temporary basis and made permanent by the legislature, and that is the absentee ballot request and tracking service. It's an online service where you can request your absentee ballot by going to our website, and then you can track it. You can see what the status of your request is. You can, once you have mailed your absentee ballot back, you can see when it's received and processed by your clerk and if it's accepted. So it's a great way to give voters some peace of mind. And of course, you can still do it the old-fashioned way. You can go in person today or this week to your municipal office and vote absentee in person. You can call the clerk on the phone and request a ballot that way. But we think this online system is really helpful and convenient to voters, and we're really excited about that.
Shenna, do you have any sense, do you have any idea what to expect on this election day, combining the absentee ballots plus people who show up at the polls? What do you think the voter turnout is going to be?
So it is hard to estimate, especially given the ballot questions. Off-year elections in our state range turnout could be as low as 20%, probably not, or as high as 50%. It certainly won't reach 2020 levels. In 2020, more than 75% of Mainers turned out to vote, and more than 62% of those voters voted absentee. Maine is consistently one of the best states in the country in terms of voter participation. Last year, we were third in the country in voter participation. But this year is likely to be lighter in terms of overall turnout. That said, we have three questions on the ballot, and those are certainly a draw for supporters and opponents.
And I understand, I know that there's a lot of confusion about the three questions on the ballot, especially questions one and three. And I do want to note that this week on Maine Calling, we will be talking about those. Tomorrow will be question three, on Friday, question one. Some of the listeners may have noticed that yesterday I said that today we would be talking about question one. We have postponed that show because there's a big hearing today in Augusta before the Department of Environmental Protection about the very corridor that we were going to discuss. So that show is going to be on Friday. Shenna Bellows was kind enough to rearrange her schedule to be on the program today. But we will be talking about question one and three on Maine Calling. But also, Secretary of State Shenna Bellows, your office has a guide to the election that people can get for free.
Yes, absolutely. We distribute the citizen's guide to the election. We can send you a print version in the mail if you call our offices, or we have that available online. And the reason is, keep in mind, Maine is really special and unique in that groups of citizens can propose legislation that goes to a referendum question. The question is simply a summary of the proposal, and the proposals generally have a great deal of detail. And that's what's in the citizen's guide that we make available both online and print copies, absolutely free of charge, also available in your local libraries all across the state and with your clerk's offices.
Tell us about the process for the wording on the ballot. When your predecessor was on the program, when Matt Dunlap was on the program, Shenna, almost every single time he was on the show, somebody called to complain about the wording of at least one of the ballot questions. And I suspect that could happen today. So how does that work? How is the ballot question wording determined?
So our job at the Secretary of State's office is to summarize the legislation that is brought to us. So it isn't to weigh in on whether the proposal is good or bad or otherwise. It's simply to try to capture it in summary. And the question for the voters is, do you want to pass a new law? So the proposal that's brought forward by the citizenry with a citizen's petition is a new proposed law. And the reason that yes means to, well, from some people's perspective, yes means no and no means yes. But the question is, do you want to pass this proposed law? And that's why it's formatted in the way that it is. And then in terms of whether a question has multiple parts or not, again, our job is to summarize the proposal that's brought forward to us. And if there are multiple parts of the proposal, we do our best to summarize that in a neutral and objective way. With regards to the substance, I think that's definitely the topic of your next show, right? We are focused on making sure that as many people as possible are able to access their right to vote. And I want to circle back because there are a couple things I almost forgot to mention about modifications for this election. Absentee ballot drop boxes. So we first saw those in 2020. They were an innovation in response to the pandemic. And I'm glad to say they are here to stay. The legislature made those permanent as part of voting rights legislation. More than 80% of Maine voters will have access to an absentee ballot drop box in their community. And this is really exciting to me because you look across the country and many states were taking their drop boxes down because politicians got uncomfortable with too many people voting, quite frankly. We instead are making ours permanent. And we've put in place some innovations for the future that will take some design work and some implementation. Online voter registration, Representative Teresa Purrs brought that legislation forward, and we're actually this fall going out to bid with different technology companies to secure the technology to move forward with online voter registration in the future. So that should be available for the presidential in 2024. And ongoing absentee voting. So seniors and people with disabilities who vote absentee year after year, effective in 2023, they'll be able to be permanent absentee voters. And then finally, we just joined a new interstate collaborative for voter security. It's called the Electronic Registration Information Center. And it's a system with other states to exchange our voter lists so that we will know in the future if a voter in Maine moves to Florida and registers there, we'll be able to take them off our rolls. We'll be able to exchange that information very quickly and do more to improve our voter lists. So those are the other innovations that happened this year that we're really excited about.
You said we just joined this. When did that happen?
So earlier this fall, I signed a contract with ERIC, the information exchange with other states. And so our tech people are working with their tech people to start that process of exchanging Maine's voter list with the voter list for other states. It will help us identify people who are deceased, who move out of state and then pass away. It will help us identify voters who move and change their registration. It will be a great way to further improve and strengthen the integrity of our voter lists. So we're really excited about that.
Do you have a sense of when that'll be in place and when that'll be working?
So it will be an ongoing process. This is something that we don't do just once. We'll be doing it on a regular basis. And so our hope is that by the end of this fall, we'll have begun those data exchanges and doing that list maintenance. We already use some national systems like national change of address systems. And we already update our voter list when people are deceased here in our state. We get that information and make those changes. But this just makes it even stronger. And we're really excited about that. The legislature has a lot to be proud of in terms of strengthening our election laws this year.
Shanna, as you well know, nationwide, Republicans have been challenging election results from the 2020 election, and in some states doing recounts and audits. In August, Republican state legislator Heidi Sampson and others called for a forensic audit here of the 2020 election and have demanded that you hand over all ballots to an outside auditor hired by them. My understanding is that these affidavits cannot compel you to hand over this information, but I wonder where this request stands, what you make of it.
So first and foremost, I regret to say this is a giant scam. We look and see what happened in Arizona, where Arizona turned over their ballots and equipment to Cyber Ninja, a third-party firm. The folks involved in that fraudulent audit made millions of dollars off of innocent, well-intentioned people who thought that they were giving money to a legitimate cause. And unfortunately, handing over the ballots and the equipment to a third party compromises the integrity and security of those ballots and that equipment. Keep in mind, the 2020 election was objectively assessed by the Trump administration's top security officials as the most free, fair, and secure election in modern history. And when you look at what happened in Maine, you know, we are really fortunate in our state. We're a purple state, right? People vote the person and the principal, not party. And so as a result, we frequently have random and unexpected recounts. And time again, including in 2020, our recount process demonstrates the validity and integrity of the election process itself. We have amazing local election officials who work tirelessly on election administration. And we have a lot of safeguards in place that make us one of the best states in the nation for election administration. So it is so sad to hear people get sucked in by this national scam that is really seeking to profit off of people's fears and calling for fake audits to make millions of dollars, scamming people and raising questions about the 2020 election. Some people call it the big lie, and it is absolutely true. And it's really, I think, so unfortunate. And I think it stands in stark contrast to what happened in the legislature this year. We had bipartisan support for measures like joining ERIC. We've always had bipartisan support for fundamental, sound election reforms. I mean, same-day voter registration in Maine was passed in 1973 by a Republican-controlled legislature and is something that has really stood the test of time. So we have a lot to be proud of in our state, and it makes me very sad when people get sucked in to misinformation and disinformation that is spreading nationally. And just interesting on that point of misinformation and disinformation, as the state's chief elections official, I participate in secret classified briefings on election security with national authorities from the Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, and whatnot. And what they will tell you is our foreign adversaries are exploiting people's vulnerability to disinformation and misinformation and really spreading that to undermine confidence in our democracy itself. And that too, it's just it's so unfortunate when people get sucked into that.
What about the specific affidavit though, Shanna? Are you just simply ignoring it?
So again, this is what makes me so sad. It's fake. It's not real. It doesn't have the force of law. So people are sending what they think is a so-called affidavit, and it's a request for me to compromise the integrity of our elections by turning over ballots or equipment, something that is prohibited by federal law and state law for very good reason. And so they're calling for me to turn that over to Cyber Ninja or someone else. And A, that would compromise the integrity of our elections. It is a scam. And the idea that it's an affidavit, I think the Attorney General said something to the effect of, it's not worth the paper that it's printed on. It's no different than an ordinary letter. And that's what makes me so sad. Just because it's being called an affidavit, it's not real. It doesn't have the force of law.
Earlier, you were talking about some of the changes in Maine's election process. I'm wondering what you would like to see beyond that. What are you hoping will be changes during your term as Secretary of State?
So I think that this conversation about election security is a vitally important conversation, because make no mistake, there are threats to election security. And we are so fortunate we have such a robust recount process in Maine, but we could do more. So one of the initiatives that we've been working on in a bipartisan collaborative way is post-election audit legislation sponsored by Representative Nicole Grachowski. I think that's a really important proposal. I think we should think very carefully about what real post-election audits might look like. And I served on a national bipartisan vote verification task force with 4 Republican secretaries of state and 4 Democratic secretaries of state, including myself. We looked at post-election audit procedures from all across the country and what states have in common and what states do well. I would like to see those best practices that we unanimously endorsed put into practice here in our state. That's what I'd like to see happen in 2022.
Well, Shanna Bellows, we have to take a break, but we have not talked yet about what is going to happen with the vulgar license plates that are on the streets of Maine. So we will talk about that after the break. If you have questions about elections, about license plates, about the Maine State Archive, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, or you can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or find us on Facebook or Instagram. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Eastern Basements, a division of Maine-owned Eastern Mold Remediation, offering basement waterproofing solutions, easternbasements.com, and by Seth Rigoletti Leadership Coach, helping businesses and individuals say it simply, clearly, and persuasively. Learn more at SethRigoletti.com.
From the late 1880s, and through much of the 20th century, the governments of Canada and the United States removed Indigenous children from their parents' homes.
The goal was assimilation. The goal was to separate Indigenous kids from their families so that they would stop being Indigenous.
Hello, I'm Philip Young. This week on World Affairs, the legacy of Indigenous boarding schools and the search for truth and reconciliation.
And you can hear that broadcast this afternoon at 2 p.m. here on Maine Public Radio. And join us Wednesday evening at 8 on Maine Public Television as Nature kicks off its 40th season on PBS with My Garden of 1,000 Bees, a story of surprise and revelation. A wildlife cameraman spends his time during the pandemic lockdown filming the bees in his urban garden and discovering the many diverse species and personalities that exist in this insect family. That's My Garden of 1,000 Bees on Nature, Wednesday night at 8 on Maine Public Television.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the show, Shenna Bellows, who is Maine's Secretary of State. Share your comments or questions via email, a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Shenna Bellows, all of us have seen them when we're out on the road. License plates, we scratch our heads and we think, how on earth did that get through? Apparently, there did not used to be a process for getting through. Anything that somebody was willing to pay the extra cash for got through the system, no longer the case. Tell us what the new law that has just gone into effect does when it comes in terms of license plates. What is the line that will be drawn in terms of whether or not a license plate is not acceptable?
Well, so keep in mind that for a long time, Maine did regulate license plates. When I first got my driver license back in 1992, Maine was regulating the content. Well, they didn't have a vanity plate program, but when we got the vanity plate program, we regulated that. In 2015, there had been a recent lawsuit in New Hampshire challenging New Hampshire's limitations. And so the legislature eliminated limits on those license plates. And we immediately saw an explosion of the vulgar license plate. And I can't list them on the radio, right? That would be potentially subject to sanction or fine by the FCC.
Please don't.
So Maine became kind of the wild, wild west. We had almost completely deregulated vanity plates, even as neighboring New Hampshire and other states had in place common sense regulations. So Senator Bill Diamond brought forward legislation, I'm glad he did, that we would reinstate some very clear limitations. So no more obscenity or profanity. If you want to use the F word on a bumper sticker, on custom detailing, go for it, but not on the government issued public property that is the license plate. Similarly, no derogatory, discriminatory references based on race, sexual orientation, gender identity, nationality, or religion. If it is something that would be discriminatory in the workplace or on the airwaves, it should not be on a government issued license plate. So no F word, no N word. And those are the basic limitations, but additionally, no explicit sexual acts or genitalia. And so that's the law that passed. Now it is our job to implement it in a way that respects the constitutional First Amendment, free speech rights of the citizenry, and the public interest that has been upheld by the Supreme Court in placing basic limitations on government speech or speech broadcast on government means like the government-owned license plate. That's a common misconception. People think, oh, it's my license plate. I purchased it. No, it's actually government property. It's the registration plate that you were issued by the state of Maine. It's produced actually by the state of Maine. And so that's the law. We are engaged in rulemaking. We will be issuing public rules because what is obscene or profane? Well, I was looking for a list, you know, thinking perhaps the Supreme Court had detailed exactly which words are prohibited or that perhaps there might be a manual somewhere aside from the Urban Dictionary. And what we're finding is that other states have procedures, they have processes. It's not as explicit as a word list. And so we will be issuing rulemaking. At that point, we'll send out letters to plates that might violate those standards that are issued in the rulemaking and the law. And then folks have an opportunity to appeal that ruling through an appeals process, or they can exchange their plate for another vanity plate free of charge that is not obscene or profane, or a standard numeric plate.
So let me get this clear. So right away, right today, pretty much if you have one of these, you know you have one, and you're saying to somebody, just go ahead and call in and say you're going to send it in and trade it in for something else for free. But at this point, you don't have someone in your office going through the card catalog and looking and trying to determine which people to reach out to yet.
Did you know that there are 121,000 vanity plates in the state of Maine out of the 1.9 million license plates, more or less? It's a lot. So we have reviewed.
Oh gosh, Shanna, you just froze. Darn. I'm hoping that your face will unfreeze and that your voice will come back to Maine Calling. Shoot, I think what we're going to do is we're going to go to a break and hope that we get Shanna Bellows back in just a couple minutes. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Volta Indoor Climbing and Fitness, committed to helping create an all-inclusive and health-focused community. Details at voltaclimbing.com. By Evergreen Home Performance, dedicated to helping homeowners qualify for efficiency main insulation rebates and loans. More at evergreenyourhome.com. And by Snow Pond Community Arts, seeking a violin instructor to join in building an innovative arts education program. Learn more and apply at snowpond.org.
I'm Tanya Mosley. A composer in St. Louis, Missouri, captures the collective grief felt for those lost to COVID-19 through song.
Being able to put that together in a way that we can work as a community to grieve was very special and very needed.
That's next time on Here and Now.
Stay with us Here and Now, upcoming shortly at 12 noon today here on Maine Public Radio. If you're thinking about replacing your current vehicle, there's still time to take advantage of our All Cars Considered campaign. When you donate a vehicle to Maine Public during the month of October, our friends at Lee Auto Malls will provide you with a $500 Lee Thank You Reward for use toward the purchase of a new or used vehicle at any of Lee Auto Malls' 19 locations throughout Maine. For complete details, please visit mainepublic.org, and remember that donated cars, trucks, and SUVs make it possible for us to do more here at your public radio station.
And we're back, and we have Secretary of State Shanna Bellows back with us after a technical glitch. Shanna, you're there, right?
Yeah, it's not a Zoom meeting if it doesn't freeze up suddenly or someone doesn't go on mute, right?
That's right. And it's terrific to hear your voice. If you are on speakerphone, it's best if you hold the handset. And I really appreciate you calling in to finish this conversation. We were talking about the change in license plate regulations. If you'd like to join the conversation, we are also talking about elections. And we have one 2 weeks from today. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Anyway, Shanna Bellows, when your voice went away, you were talking about what the process might be or will be. I think you were saying that you're trying to figure that out right now, but it sounded to me like it might take a few months to get this all underway.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So it may take a couple of months. We'll be issuing rulemaking. Once public will have an opportunity to comment on those rules, and then we will send out letters to people that currently hold those obscene or profane plates. In the meantime, if you are trying to get a vanity plate at the Bureau of Motor Vehicles, there may be some delays. We are going to be reviewing vanity plate requests that come in. We won't deny anyone until the rules are in place. But if there are any questions at all, those may be delayed.
Molly on Twitter asks, why does anyone care enough about license plates to create a potential free speech issue? And an interesting position you're in, Shenna Bellows. You used to be head of the Maine ACLU. You've thought a lot about free speech in your day.
I have, and I think free speech is extraordinarily important. And I also think that it's important to recognize that part of freedom of speech is also, and freedom of thought, freedom of association, is the ability to make choices. And so with regards to freedom of speech online or in books and magazines and everywhere that we take it so incredibly seriously, people have a choice as to whether or not to view something, whether or not to absorb that message. The license plate is government-issued property. It's a piece of government property. And I think the question is the government forced to say obscene or profane things? Is the government itself forced to issue these messages? Now, I don't see this being a huge deal insofar as most states have some common sense regulations on what the government is required to print on the license plate. And from a parent's perspective or a grandparent's perspective, you know, I remember talking to a grandfather early in my term as secretary. I was getting many, many complaints about this issue. And he said, look, you know, I like to play the license plate game with my grandkids. And that brought me back. I remembered the license plate game where we would look for fun, you know, out-of-state license plates or unusual sayings on plates. And he said, I can't do that anymore because suddenly I'm in this conversation that I'm really not sure my grandkids are ready to have about sexual acts or what a particular word means. And he said, that's really too bad. And so I think that's what this is all about. You don't have the ability to turn off someone else's license plate. And so should the government be required to print some of these things on the plate? We say no.
We'll go to Jane, who's calling from Bath. Hi, Jane. Go ahead.
Good morning, and thank you. I am so glad to have a chance to talk with you this morning. I've got a question, and it concerns voter registration. We have someone in our area living there who purchased a home and registered to vote using a property that he isn't actually a resident of. He still lives in our town. He owns two properties. The property that he used to register to vote is not, I think the correct word is the domicile. And so when we asked our clerk about it, we were told that in order to address that issue, that discrepancy, someone would actually have to confront him when he goes to vote and uses that incorrect address. And so that didn't sound quite right. And then it also raises the issue of, excuse me, what if someone has done that and then they choose to vote by absentee ballot, then it would like never be caught. So what's the remedy if you know that somebody is not using their correct address when they register to vote?
So this is a really important question. And thank you. Thank you for your call. Two things. One, when someone registers to vote, they do need to demonstrate proof of identity and proof of residency. So sometimes people say, oh, we don't have a voter ID in Maine. Well, we do require identity and residency to be demonstrated at the time of registration. Now, generally, proof of residency can be a bill, can be a lease, can be property ownership in a particular town. The voter makes a choice about where they reside. They make a choice about where they spend their time, where they wish to declare their residency. You know, some people go out to camp in the summertime, but their permanent residence may be at a different home. And so that ability to declare your residency and declare your domicile is an important one that we wouldn't want to question. I don't think that we want to get into a position of assessing whether someone, as long as they're not trying to vote in two places at the same time, or as long as they're not trying to perpetrate fraud. Where if you have a bona fide specific knowledge that someone is, in fact, voting improperly or fraudulently, then under Maine law, you do have the right as a voter with specific knowledge about a specific individual's actions to challenge a ballot. And when they vote in person, people can challenge a ballot at the poll. There are poll watchers from both parties that have that ability, but Maine law does require that that knowledge be specific. You can't go and start challenging all the students from the local college, for example. Similarly, in terms of absentee ballot processing, the hours for processing are posted by the municipality in advance so that observers may go and watch the process of processing the absentee ballots. And observers are welcome from both parties. And so, again, the absentee ballot could be challenged at the time of processing of the absentee ballots, because that processing doesn't just happen when the ballot is necessarily received. It is processed at the allocated time that is pre-announced. So that is the recommendation for challenging that ballot. It might be worth reaching out to this individual to suss out, you know, have they moved? Perhaps they lived in one home and have purchased another and declared residency because they are legitimately transitioning into the second residence. That I can't speak to. But we do take voter fraud very seriously, particularly any attempts to vote twice. That is something that is reviewed very carefully before elections happen. In fact, that is how one person was caught in Northern Maine in 2020 before the ballot was ever processed and they were prosecuted. We also review it after voting is complete. We look for duplicate names and duplicate voting because the number of ballots is matched against the incoming voter lists and the voter participation history. And if we see any duplicates anywhere in the state, we track those down to see if there really are two John Does or if John Doe voted in two different municipalities. And there was, again, an example of that in the 2020 election, and that person was prosecuted. So the clerk is not wrong about the process of challenging ballots. And the clerk is doing the right thing and being cautious about questioning the voter's right to declare their residency as long as they're not trying to perpetrate fraud.
Jane, thank you for your question. And that reminds me, Shen, I wanted to ask you, just last week, the Republican Party announced that they were hiring a full-time election integrity director in Maine. And I was wondering what your response was to that announcement.
Our office had a great relationship with the integrity director from the prior cycle. This is something that they've done in the past as well. We try to have an open door to advocates from all political parties, as well as nonprofit organizations, leading up to and during the election season, to be clear and transparent about our policies, about the laws of the state, and to address any issues that are verified, bona fide issues that people have. So we welcome collaboration and input from all of the political parties. We do caution people about falling victim to some of the partisan attacks on election integrity that we've seen in other states that are really grounded in misinformation and disinformation that we talked about earlier in the program, and really grounded in a scam where people are trying to profit off of fears and lies about the 2020 election.
Email here from Lee. Could you please ask Secretary Bellows if she could authorize clerks at town halls to provide veteran license plate military campaign decals after review of the DD-214 discharge document? At this time only, DMV offices provide these, and there are often long waits. It would be great to be able to obtain the decals within the town.
Oh, that's a very interesting suggestion that I will bring back to our Bureau of Motor Vehicles. Thank you. I will say that veterans' license plates are available and can be requested through the towns, and we are trying to expedite some of those types of requests. We actually received an inquiry just last week that came to my attention, and sometimes those inquiries can help us make stronger policy. So, for example, traditionally our office had not always been issuing veterans' plates to members of the National Guard. This is near and dear to my heart because my brother-in-law served in the National Guard and did 3 tours of duty while in the Guard. So we just changed our internal policies, for example, to allow veterans plates to be issued to active members of the Guard with 3 or more years of service under the statute.
An email here from Scott. Will the absentee ballots be opened and results released more closely to live time versus only after the in-person election? I believe that would be helpful in alleviating tensions resulting from the sour grapes later in the process.
So under state law, and we actually strengthened this in the past session, it is really important that all of the ballots be counted at the same time. And that is starting immediately after the polls close on election day. And the reason is you don't want preliminary results or partial results to influence voter behavior. We want everyone to make their decisions about whether to participate and how to participate without outside interference. And so that's why we think it's really important that all the votes be counted at the same time. Now, one of the things our office has worked with towns to do is put in place ES&S tabulators. These are tabulation machines. They're actually not connected to the internet. They can't be hacked in any way. They're tested at our office before deployment, and then they're tested at the municipal level to ensure their accuracy. These tabulators can certainly expedite the process in individual towns so the individual results are available. But generally in Maine, we've been very lucky. Election results have been available in most places on election night. And that certainly, to your point, has improved and strengthened confidence in the results. Keep also in mind that this tabulation doesn't happen behind closed doors. It isn't just the clerk in a back room doing the tabulation. This is a transparent process with observers generally from both parties as well as independent outside organizations present for tabulation. That's also something we strengthened in the law this year, just to make sure that those nonpartisan observers can have space to watch the tabulation and watch the processing of the ballots so people can have confidence that that is fair and secure.
We'll go to Ethan calling from Saco. Hi, Ethan. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. You may have just answered one of my questions. I'm not quite sure I heard it correctly. The first part of my question is, I thought that the Department of Motor Vehicles was already screening for obscenity plates. And by the way, I've never seen, personally, it doesn't mean they don't exist, but never seen one. But the second part of my question was, how do we know the voting machines are tabulating locally? You know, if they're electronic, how do we know they're tabulating correctly? Can we trust them if they are using proprietary code for that electronic tabulation? You may have already just answered that, but I'll take my answer off there. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So I'll take your second question first because I did just answer that, but I want to just make it crystal clear to people. So the tabulators are not connected to the internet. They cannot be hacked, and they are tested with test ballots with multiple outcomes so that we can see firsthand that they are working and working properly and objectively. So we can be crystal clear and confident in the outcome of that. However, it's important to realize Maine has what's the gold standard in election security, and that is paper ballots. So in our recount process, and there were a couple of recounts last election cycle. That's yet another way of verifying that those election results were fair and secure. So we feel very good about that. In terms of obscenity on the roads, to your point, it was prohibited until 2015. In 2015, the ban on obscenity was lifted, and we saw many obscene license plates hitting the roads. But when I say many, we're talking about less than 1% of all license plates, right? So it's hard to know exactly how many will be prohibited under the new rules. It will be probably a few hundred out of the 121,000 vanity plates. Most of the vanity plates are fine. But just yesterday, I received a letter and a picture from an outraged constituent with a vanity plate that had the F word spelled out very clearly. And we see that all the time. It does exist. There are at least a dozen of those plates on the road. We're well aware of them.
All right. We'll go to Larry, who's calling from Surrey. Hi, Larry. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I have one question for Shanna regarding the license plate holders. Oftentimes you see license plate holders covering up the state of origin. And I just wanted to get Shanna's view on that. And number two comment is, I just wanted to compliment the main turnpike on the electronic signs that have messages that are oftentimes pretty funny.
We love the main turnpike signs. They are fantastic. So that's run out of the Maine Department of Transportation. They do an excellent, excellent job. With regards to the license plate holders, that is something I'd have to look into, perhaps with the state police. Of course, the license plate is supposed to display the state of origin. I'm sure for Maine law enforcement, if Maine is obscured, sometimes based on the design, they know where that's from, but certainly there's a reason the states, it's important that the full license plate is displayed. Whether there is a law or statute or rule prohibiting that, I'm not certain, but we can certainly share that answer on Twitter and tag Maine Calling.
Larry, I love those signs too. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate that. Let's see here. We'll go to Betsy, who's calling from Knox. Hi, Betsy. Go ahead.
Hi. Hi, Shanna. It's Betsy. Just wanted to call in and say I am the deputy town clerk and the voter registrar in my town, and we just tested our machines the other day, and they worked just spiffy. And we could tell that they were going to be totally accurately tabulating the vote on November 2nd.
I love that. Thank you so much. And I think, you know, some folks, by the way, if you're listening and you're interested in how elections work, I know our town clerks are always looking for volunteer poll workers. Maine law requires that poll workers be present and participating in election administration on election day from both parties. So if you're interested in getting to know the process, reach out to your clerk, because your clerk is probably looking for some volunteer assistance. And I think people who are new to the state or new to the process don't realize just how transparent it is. It really is a very public process. It's very clear and it's very secure. And the security measures have been developed over time with good people from all parties working together collaboratively to do what's right for the state of Maine. And we should feel very lucky in our state about the security of our elections, about the level of participation with more than 75% of Mainers participating. It's really exciting. So thank you, Betsy. Thank you for your service as a deputy clerk and a registrar. We appreciate you.
Good to talk to you guys. Bye-bye.
Betsy, thanks for your call. And Shanna, I'm glad you brought up poll workers, because I know a year ago there was a real worry about maybe not having enough poll workers because of the pandemic. Is that a concern again this year, or do you think you're in pretty good shape?
We're in decent shape, but it is always a concern. And particularly, there are some towns where Democrats far outnumber Republicans and other towns where Republicans far outnumber Democrats. So one clerk had reached out to us and said, I'm having a really hard time finding poll workers from both parties to volunteer on Election Day. So absolutely, if listeners are interested in volunteering, please let the clerk know. There is always a need, and more volunteers makes light work and is really very much appreciated. And another trend that we're seeing across the country that is very concerning is threats to local election officials. So unfortunately, this dangerous partisan rhetoric that is being fueled by foreign adversaries and bad actors on social media is leading to real-time threats against election workers in other states. And so that, too, has been a challenge in terms of support for our local election officials, who do a great job.
All right. Larry in Portland, go ahead. And we're tight on time, so if you could be quick, that'd be great.
All right, I'll be quick. Yes, I just always wanted to share this. I'm an extreme liberal. Bernie Sanders is too conservative for me. But I always wanted to advocate for election integrity, in that it's similar to when you have a five-year-old child that can't go to sleep because he's the monster under the bed. You've got to show him there's no monster under the bed. And that basically is what most Republicans and conservatives need. They need to see there's no monster in the closet, no monster under the bed. And, liberals and Democrats should probably get behind that.
Larry, are you saying that you, even though you're a liberal, you support some of the measures that Republicans are advocating across the country for election integrity?
Yeah, I think some Democrats should just try to get on board or somehow try to participate in as much as they can. And of course, there's plenty of ways to counter that. If you know that they're going to try to suppress voters, then if you feel that's happening, you can volunteer or do whatever you can to counter that. I'm just saying railing against it is not very helpful. You know, it's not going to change anything. So, the Republicans have got to see there's no monster under the bed. There's no monster in the closet.
All right. Larry, thanks for your call. Shanna Bello is about 30 seconds to wrap it up.
We completely agree that election security and integrity is fundamental to our democracy. We work on it every day, as do our local and state elections officials. It is so important. And it's important to differentiate between true election security and integrity and scams or fraud. And so that's the work, the nonpartisan work that's happening. And we have a lot to be proud of here in our state.
Well, Shanna Bellows, thank you so much for coming on to Maine Calling today, especially for changing your schedule around and coming on a different day than we originally first asked you. We really appreciate it. Shanna Bellows is Maine's Secretary of State. Today's sound engineer was George Thomas. Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn produce Maine Calling. Today's program will be rebroadcast tonight at 7. You can visit mainecalling.org to listen to past programs and to sign up for our podcast. Tomorrow on the program, we are going to have answers to your questions about Ballot Initiative 3, which, if passed, would amend the Maine Constitution to declare, quote, that all individuals have a natural, inherent, and unalienable right to grow, raise, harvest, produce, and consume food of their own choosing. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.